So Defiance, pretty jank, but totally core.
Yeah.
Okay.
Serious.
Got it.
Mission.
Engage.
What happened to the other?
I'm holding one. Charles is holding one.
Ah.
You're not.
You're the only one.
Who's incorrect. I'm holding one now.
Dialogue. Yours.
All right. Roll for host.
Roll for host.
2. 14.
It's actually 9, but
3.
Ah.
Is that me?
14. That's you, Josh.
Nice.
Josh wins.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been, geez.
Long time.
Yes.
Long time, no cast.
Yep.
3 or 4 weeks? 4 weeks?
Thank you for visiting us at our website, theescortmission.com, and click on our link to go to Amazon to buy things so that we get money, and also see the show notes where you can get links to everything we talk about if we eventually get around to them.
hint, hint.
Oh, no, that wasn't, like, passive-aggressive. that was, like, I'm really appreciative that Charles doing the notes, like, every week.
Once we get to it.
Because I don't have to do it.
yeah, totally. Screw that
so
job.
So I'm definitely not complaining. So how you doing, guys? Welcome.
Doing well.
Doing well?
Charles. Yeah. Mike.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks for good.
Being here.
Glad to be back.
Thanks, Josh. Good to be back.
Back to you, man.
Let's start with
take it away.
With like, I don't know, news.
Oh, we have mailbag. We have mailbag.
We do have, snap. let's do the mailbag.
Mailbag, mailbag. We're going to open the mailbag.
Mail!
Jesus.
Sorry.
Guar sings the mailbag.
Yeah. So Dave sent us an email. He was on our show before when we had him on the show. When
Developer Dave.
Developer Dave.
DD.
So he sent us an email talking about a recent, actually, I don't know if it was recent, probably fairly recent, GDC postmortem. GDC does a lot of these now. I've seen a few of them. They're all pretty interesting, where the original developer of a game comes and talks about what went into making the game and the history and story behind it. So there was one on Jetpack Joyride, which is a pretty popular iOS infinite runner type of game.
Yeah, we've recommended it on the show before.
And because of the GDC, because of that postmortem, I actually was, because I had actually, I had shat on it before and did not think it was very fun. But because after watching that, I actually re-downloaded it and tried it again and, you know, played it, I don't know, maybe like a dozen runs
found
or so.
Found more to like.
It was, yeah, I didn't hate it as much, but I still don't think it's a good, it's not the best infinite runner. It is a well-made game, and the way they talked about it, like the mechanics of how they decided to do things in the game, you know, makes me appreciate it more. So I respect it more, but I don't necessarily enjoy it still.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love those GDC.
Yeah, I love them. God,
so the only
so
ones,
interesting.
They start releasing like, I don't know, a few months after that GDC, they start releasing videos, and they kind of do this metered release, the same way TED does, right? Where they have every TED talk is recorded at one conference, but then they release them out over the year. Or TED has more than one conference now, I guess. But I watched one on localizing StarCraft and kind of the challenge of localizing StarCraft 2 in 15 or 20. I think it was 12 languages.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, make a game in 12 languages, have like ultra high quality AAA voice acting in 12 different languages, and it's just like this amazing challenge, and kind of the you have to kind of the way that you manage that project and run that campaign it was very cool.
Brilliant. Yeah, I find these super interesting too, except I'm just really bad at watching them because I don't effectively use my YouTube queue. I just queue things, so one of these days I'll get around to like watching thousands of things like that I've queued up on YouTube and go, hey guys, these things from years ago were awesome.
You're but, right, they were awesome.
I actually, sorry to change the topic briefly, but I launched the YouTube app on the Xbox recently and watched the recent strip search from Penny Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
And or watched the last few that I was behind on a week ago. And after I got cut up, I was like, I want more Penny Arcade. And I was already on the Penny Arcade channel, so I just went down and finished season one of the Penny Arcade TV because I never finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I marathoned it. I thought it was way longer than I thought. I thought it was only like 10 episodes, but it was like 22 or something.
Yeah.
and that shit is awesome. And I was just like, wanted to keep marathoning it forever.
Totes.
So now I'm like a YouTube like channel addict a little bit. Well, not yet, but I could see the potential there.
Oh, man.
And I'm going to start like maybe watching YouTube things.
I'm heavy into YouTube channels. I watch a lot of YouTube channels. I'm sure you are. Yeah.
I know you talk about it all the time, and then I never watch any of
the Drive channel is good.
Yeah. I still only use YouTube, but like the 10-second links during the day, not the like sit down at home and
that's
watch
the surface
TV
level
for a while.
That's the cat video part of YouTube.
Yeah. Did you watch the world's fastest pit stop that I linked to today?
That was amazing.
That was amazing. Yeah. So nuts.
I had seen that before, and it's so fast that I...
No, you hadn't, because it just happened.
No, there was totally a video that it was out like yesterday. So apparently there's multiple videos.
Maybe it was the same. Was it the Malaysia race?
I don't remember which race it was, but it was 2 seconds.
Okay, yeah. So the Red Bull...
I don't even know what was happening. It was so fast. I couldn't parse it.
It's because of the edit. It was an annoying edit.
It was just... Because it was just recorded off the live feed from the race.
Right.
So it was just like whatever the director did, like cutting from shot to shot of that pit stop, happened to be an annoying edit.
Maybe this is a different video, because the one that I saw was just one shot for about 5 seconds, whereas two of them were the pit stop. There was no cutting. There was no edit. Oh.
The Charles Link that was the world record, that was 2.05 seconds for the pit stop total time. And this is like recorded from the computer in the car. That's exactly how long the car was perfectly still.
Yeah.
So that's super accurate, right?
Which probably means that the guy had the gun on the wheel while it was still rolling a little bit, you know, and was pulling the wheel nut off as the car was slowing down.
So this was not a shot from overhead?
It was like a shot from behind, and then in the middle of it, it cuts to a shot from in front.
Ah.
Or vice versa.
Okay.
And so it's like, Jesus, that already happened. And you didn't get to like stare at the guys the whole time, because it just cuts right in the middle.
So, I don't know if it was the same one, but it was 2 seconds and it was all overhead. There was no cut. It was just like he pulled in, they all moved in, did shit for 2 seconds, and then pulled out. And I was like, what just happened?
Nice.
I don't even understand. Yeah. Like, it didn't even look like they did anything.
It's amazing.
So the thing that happened in Formula One was that there were a bunch of accidents where essentially... What they did to make pit stops fast is, this is a bad idea, they pressurized the fuel systems. So if you're a NASCAR, there dudes come over the wall, and they have a bunch of rules where like you can only have 5 guys over the wall in NASCAR at one time. So you have to change 4 tires and put fuel in the car, and only 5 guys can be doing that. So they're like throwing tools back and forth to guys who are not over the wall, and... You know, it's a little bit more of a dance. F1, it's like, you can have 50 guys out there at once, right? So they literally have 3 guys for each wheel. There's a guy who's holding the new wheel. There's a guy with the gun. And there's a guy who's going to take off the old wheel, right? And so they have all those guys
plus
more.
There's at least 12 changing wheels.
In F1, they had pressurized the fuel systems. Because they're like, we're changing wheels so fast that we're just sitting there waiting for the fuel to just drain in with gravity. They're like, fuck gravity. Gravity's bullshit. We need like pressurized fuel systems. So they did that. They pressurized these hoses. So it's like firing gas into the thing. And so in order to make that work, you have to lock the nozzle on, right? Because if you don't lock the nozzle on and it's firing out, it's going to just spray everywhere. That's bad.
Hilarity. Right?
So then you have this nozzle that's locked on to the car, but the whole idea is that the car's going to take off as fast as it possibly can. So if any little thing jams, or if there's like a dog, you know, fur coat or something, like a little piece of gravel or something that gets stuck in there, then that shit's not coming out of the locked on hole. And so there were cars just driving away and ripping the pressurized fuel system thing off and then just like spraying gas over and starting fires. And so they're like, all right, well, that's not a good option. What do we do now? So now they just make people run with enough fuel to go the entire race, right? So they're like, you have to put enough fuel in the car to make it all the way through.
But I assume that affects the speed of it.
It does. It means the cars get much, much faster as the race goes on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like every kilogram is like, every gallon of fuel, maybe it's liter, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
Every unit of fuel is like a tenth of a second off the lap time. So it's a significant drop, like, every gallon's worth of fuel. And they get like, I don't know, they get like 3 miles a gallon or something like that. So yeah, now they have to, so the reason this pit stop was so fast is literally only thing they did was change 4 tires. So
still in 2 seconds, that's insane.
2.05 seconds, insane. Change 4 tires in and out. Yeah. It happened so fast that the random cut in the middle of it seems like it was editing part of it away, and you're like, what? You can't really tell what happened.
Right. Yeah, that was a bad decision. I don't know why they did that.
Gotta watch the top down.
So you replied to Dave thanking him, and you mentioned something about a Life Well Wasted podcast. Yes. And so I went and listened to that, and that is excellent. That's really good. It's kind of
Robert Ashley.
Yeah, Robert Ashley. He's been out. He hasn't been doing this podcast for years because he's been with his band recording an album, but now he's done, and now he's back doing this, and it was really good. And now I want to go listen to all of them, so recommended.
Highly recommended. That show is This American Life for video games, and it's
totally
excellent.
They're great. Yep.
So thank you, Dave, for that reply. And once again, thank you for being on the show. Mm-hmm. We also got, this is like, it's a couple week old idea now. It's, you know, the controversy's not as hot. But John Cox sent us an email, and because we had mentioned Macklemore and Lewis, he mentioned the Wings sellout controversy.
Yes.
Where basically he has this song called Wings that's basically about his love for basketball, but also kind of like an anti, you know, like Nike trying to sell you expensive shoes.
As I read it or listen to it, I guess it's about his sort of growth as a person through his love for basketball.
Right.
So as a kid, how much he just loved basketball totally with all his heart. And now as an adult, how he still loves basketball, but over how that love changed over the course of his life, and how becoming more and more aware of, you know, kind of consumerist issues and kind of the problems with, you know, global advertising, et cetera,
right,
changed and colored his love and admiration for this particular sport.
Right. And his song was, he agreed to let NBA, like in some kind of promo they were doing, use his song, except
for the All-Star game.
For the All-Star game, except the lyrics were edited that certain lines would not have, because, you know, there's a couple like fairly obvious anti-capitalist sentiment, and they edited it out to where that was not in it, and he basically okayed it, and the internet rebels, and they're like, oh my god, sell out. There was this one article where this guy goes in and saying, you know, like, that was a bad move, like, how could you do that? But what's interesting is that he responded to that criticism, mm-hmm. and had a really, really well thought out counter argument to why, you know, to justify his actions. And I don't know. I mean, what did you guys think about this? I was pretty won over by his counter argument, you know, because initially I was like, well, that's kind of weird. That seems like what every, you know, band or a person who is small and gets big, that's the kind of dumb shit they do. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Well, you know, instead of immediately jumping down their throat, whenever you see one of these things, you have to like kind of put yourself in their shoes, so to speak. Because like, if you had the opportunity to have your song used for a NBA All-Star game and you're a basketball fan, like, could you possibly say no?
Right.
You know? And then when you're doing it and they're like, here's the edit we're using for the commercial, they obviously have to shorten your 4-minute song down to like 20 seconds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here are the lyrics we're using. And it, are you going to like have creative control to the point where you're like, yeah, no, add these anti-materialist lines,
right,
you know, for your basketball shoe commercial, or else you can't use my song and I'm pulling out? Like, really? You know, it's just like the real world. Like, obviously he did that to make some money, but also he did it to promote his album. And also he did it because he loves the NBA. Mm-hmm. He loves basketball. And he just thought it was a cool opportunity. And, you know, and my opinion, it's just, if anybody like sees that and go, hey, that's a cool song, and then goes and downloads his album and then listens to it, like, they'll hear the full version of the song, and it's more poignant and interesting than they may have predicted from the commercial, which is a good thing. So
yeah, it's actually kind of subversive, almost
a little bit,
in the way, you know, you bring them in with the bland, and then you get them with the real message
and
once they
if
come.
If anything, it's surprising that the shoe company wanted that song to represent them when it's kind of anti-materialist.
Well,
you know
what he basically said was that both things are true. Like, right. I really love basketball. As a child, I looked up to these people as heroes. I thought it was amazing that you could take flight like this, you know, and that is still a part of me. And I also feel these other things about it now. But it's not wrong. Like, the part that they portray, those are my lyrics, those are my words, and that's a real part of me, and I'm fine with them using that part to promote the All-Star game.
Yeah. Like, and the song itself is that complex. I mean, it talks about the conflict. It's like when I complain about Tomb Raider for being too violent, like, I still played it. I still headshot all those dudes. You know? Like it's a we're great
complex
game,
creatures,
but
man.
I can rip on it too.
Yeah, it's not black and white. Yeah.
I am large. I contain we're conflicted multitudes. People.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that anybody thinks that someone who you know their favorite musician or whatever that starts out small is not making a lot of money. You know, you feel like you found them. You feel like they're your band, and then they do a promo for a huge corporation, and you're like, oh, they're no longer my band. You know, they've sold out or they've become a part of the machine. And, you know, that kind of opinion is, you know, it's insanely uneducated because, you know, it shows that you have no idea how a business works. You know, I mean, obviously Macklemore and Lewis are not doing this to not make money. I mean, that's right. That's a goal. So, you know, not everything is that easy to shoot down. So,
but it was interesting. Thanks for writing, John.
Yeah. Yes, John. Thanks for letting us know. That was really cool. And that's the mailbag.
All right, news. I got an article I want to mention real quick. There was this Verge headline a couple weeks ago that I just thought was hilarious. Here's the quote: LG rumored to be building its own smartwatch to compete with Apple, Samsung, and Google.
Yep,
like two out of three companies that are also rumored to be working on smartwatches. Don't actually have smartwatches on the market. And Samsung, who has not had a successful or not a super successful smartphone or smartwatch on the market. And yet the Pebble.
Is that the Pebble?
Does seem like it's primary. Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't say that you got it.
Oh, I did when you were walking the dog. Sorry.
When was that?
Not on the show. Oh. He hasn't yet said it on the show.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
I was looking at your wrist earlier and thinking, that doesn't look like your normal non-watched wrist.
Yeah. That does not look like a wrist with no watch on it.
Josh right. got his Pebble.
So oh, I got my shit. Pebble. Yeah, it's pretty rad.
Is it?
Yeah, it's super rad.
Because The Verge reviewed it, and they
loved it.
I thought they were not, it was not a 10. It was like an 8 or something. Like they had some issues with it.
Well, it's limited, which okay. is true. I mean, what it is it's a watch. So it tells the time. It tells the time.
It's like a phone that makes calls.
And then it shows you notifications from your phone without taking your phone out of your pocket. Like, that's all it does right now. It's a watch that when you get an email, like, it's like, here's your email.
Yep.
Don't pull your phone out of your pocket. Just look at your wrist. You get a text. Here's your text. You get a phone call. Here's who's calling you. Press this button if you want to hang up with them and send it to voicemail or just don't do anything or pull your phone out and answer. It's just a notification
center
watch.
Put onto your wrist.
Exactly.
Yep.
And how much was that?
Just over $100.
Okay.
Yep. I think if you buy it now, Josh and I both got a deal on it because we were part of the Kickstarter.
Right.
I think it's $150.
Yeah, the retail is $150, yeah. the planned retail price, but you can't really get them for that retail
price. If that's
price
all it does, that doesn't seem worth the money.
So
obviously it will do more.
That doesn't seem worth the money. So, I mean, they're
to me
the
$100 to see it
watches.
On my wrist.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, your face doesn't seem worth the money. No, a lot of watches are $100, and all they
a lot
do
of
is
watches
tell time.
Are
right
$800.
And I also would not pay $100 for a
yeah,
watch.
Yeah, and you don't have to buy one of these. I'm not telling you to buy one.
I don't know. It just seems a little overpriced for what it does.
Well the thing is, they're
I think
be
it seems underpriced. I think it's fucking phenomenal.
If that's all it does, that doesn't seem that exciting.
That's huge, though.
That's all I want. Out of a watch, though. Do you want a watch that you talk into to for phone calls?
Sure,
that
why not?
That sounds super dumb, and I don't want to
no.
do that.
Oh, come on, Dick Tracy was doing it 30 years ago.
Do you want a touchscreen color watch where you swipe like apps to do things?
I don't know,
like,
maybe.
Probably not, because the battery's only going to last a day like
well,
your phone.
Well, I mean,
and
when it's
you might
feasible.
As well just pull your phone out, because it's going to be faster and better and a better battery life.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm still
like,
in the I'll
like,
pull my phone out
right
phase,
now,
I guess.
Realistically, the thing I want a watch to do is like look cool, tell the time, and like replace some of the things that my phone does to the extent that I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket.
It also
as
saves
often.
It saves your phone's battery life.
Saves
right?
your phone battery
because
you're
not lighting
you're
not
turning
up the screen
it on as much.
Yeah.
You can have your hands like occupied and see you know what text or email or whatever you're missing and whether or not you need to actually you know you could be in a conversation with people and instead of like pulling your phone out like. Turning on the screen, unlocking it, and looking at it for several seconds and being kind of rude, you just like very casually glance
and check your
discreetly
watch.
Check if you need to excuse yourself to take a call or to read an email and reply to it or whatever. Like it's immediately come in like super handy all the time at work or even in personal situations. Like I already like have forgotten to tell people sometimes when I'm like, hey, look at my new watch, because I love, you know, like, hey, look, I got a new watch, right? I've already like been in moments with those people where it's like I casually like read emails while talking to them that they didn't notice. You know what I mean? And then I was like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. I was reading an email. Isn't this cool? Right?
All right.
It's fucking rad.
Okay. Market space is getting huge.
Yeah.
Now it's getting
bigger. Now that Apple and Google and LG and Samsung.
Sony has one that's on the market. Yeah. Motorola have one that's on the market. Moto Active. And the Pebble is on the market. And yeah, Apple may or may not be doing one.
They'll do it. They'll do it.
Yeah, you think
Samsung
maybe.
Has like their leaked screenshots of their interface on the web. So yeah. Everybody, I think Pebble came out and was ultra successful and is like,
it's 85,000, like $10 million of pre-orders.
There's a huge amount of pent-up demand in this space. Like, let's get something on the market. Yeah.
Now, obviously, it could do more. There are ways to expand, but it's definitely a good start. And that's what the Verge review was. It said good start.
Right.
And now, they are going to expand it, right?
Yeah. They focused on like getting them into people's hands, getting the core OS or whatever like working, and then getting the SDK out for developers to add shit. But they do have like some promise prototype apps that are not out yet, where it could act like your bike computer, interface with your GPS app on your phone, and like tell you how fast you're going while you're on your bike. Like,
they've already announced a RunKeeper integration, which is good because that's the I use it for cycling, but it's running or biking or whatever activity. Yeah. Like tracking calorie counts, etc.
Like a golf range
finder. Yeah, like those are the things. Like I want it to do all that and more.
It's gonna.
Yeah, eventually, maybe, you know. But then obviously, Apple might make one that's touchscreen and color, and I'm worried they're gonna be able to do that with battery life.
It's gonna be like an iPad Mini.
They've rumored all that stuff is gonna be AMOLED, which is, I mean, that's like one day of charge as opposed to five or seven, you know?
And we're already like charging phones every day. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Are you going to want? Anyway, it may be. And Google might make one where you like, it's got a mic and you do your Google Now into it, and that's all it does.
See, that, it's like that would be cool.
100% just voice interaction with your Android device.
Yeah.
And maybe. That'd be cool too.
Or maybe you could talk to your Google Glass.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But who knows if that's a couple years away too.
Yeah.
Anyway, any other news?
The LBJ tapes, do you guys hear about that? The declassified LBJ tapes about Nixon.
Ooh, I didn't hear that.
Dude, Richard Nixon was
like Watergate stuff, you mean?
So LBJ was recording all of his LBJ was tapping phones.
Mm-hmm.
He was tapping the phone lines of American diplomats, and he recorded an American diplomat making the argument to, So apparently there were peace talks that were fairly far along during the Vietnam War, and Richard Nixon was implicated in this tapped phone call. LBJ had tapped some of these diplomats' phone calls. Nixon was apparently sabotaging those peace talks. He essentially told the Vietnamese that he would give them a better deal once he became president, than they would get via the peace talks that were happening, and so they backed out of that deal, and Nixon then became president and in effect extended the Vietnam War by a number of years and cost tens of thousands of additional lives of U.S. soldiers, and then probably maybe even hundreds of thousands of additional, Vietnamese and everything else. Incredibly fucked up, terrible thing to do. LBJ actually told Nixon's, the person who was running against Nixon, I don't remember who that was. I want to say Hamilton, but it wasn't Hamilton. There's something, I don't know who Nixon's opponent in that election was, but that person decided not to go public with this. LBJ couldn't say like, hey, guess what I found while tapping other American diplomats, phones.
Well, conflict of interest.
Right. Yeah. LBJ couldn't come out with it, but he told Nixon's presidential opponent, who decided, no, I'm far enough ahead in the polls that I don't have to use this. I don't have to bring it out. And then guess what? Didn't win, like lost by, a couple percentage points or whatever. And this stuff recently became declassified. Nixon was a douche.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Even more of a douche. than everybody already thought. Like, did we need those tapes to prove that?
Is this really a revelation?
Yeah, but I mean, just watch like, Futurama, you know, for a couple episodes.
Nixon was a douche, yes. This is like Nixon was a douche who intentionally, like...
Premeditated douchery.
Caused a war to go on for many extra years.
Yeah, he was a douche. He just became an uber douche.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He literally is the cost uber douche. Tens of thousands of lives.
Yeah.
God. Wish that guy were dead.
That sucks.
I've got a little bit of video game news, but it's news.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, Sleeping Dogs, Tomb Raider, and Hitman Absolution all lost money for Square Enix, even though they sold like multiple millions of copies.
That's amazing.
And they spent so much to make them. I
just
assume.
Could not believe that that headline. Tomb Raider and Sleeping Dogs are both so good, and I thought sold pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, they did. Millions of copies.
Yeah.
That's not good, though,
but
apparently.
Their budgets apparently were so high that they needed to sell more millions just to break even.
Yeah.
And so now Square Enix, like, totally tanked in the last year. And
didn't their president quit recently or something? I guess where he stepped down.
Let's see, John Riccitiello did, but
yeah,
like several people did from different companies recently.
Riccitiello, CEO of EA, stepped down over the SimCity controversy and other that was like the straw that broke the camel's back over general poor share price and you know company performance whatever.
Mm,
but like this is the reason I feel that you see you know three versions of Assassin's Creed 2, right?
Yeah, it's Assassin's making Creed money. 2, it's so like keep making money.
Well, no, like. Maybe they might even have, I don't know if they made or lost money on the first Assassin's Creed 2, but like they essentially got to remake that game with all the same art assets and they strip out most of the cost and like release one per year and can make back the money if indeed they lost it on the first game. I don't know if they did or not, but it's like if the game sells well enough and you can release another one the next year, but only do, you know, 30% of the work that you did to create the whole thing in the first place, then you can make these franchises profitable.
If they could make three more Tomb Raiders, like in the next, you know, annualized with the same assets and stuff, but like that would be amazing. And I hope they do, but
yeah.
I'm not sure now they're in a position to like continue to put up that much cash for that risk.
I feel like they could definitely come out with another Tomb Raider next year.
Hopefully
that looks that good and it'll still look fucking amazing.
I mean, I really want a Sleeping Dog sequel. Yeah. I don't really care about Hitman Absolution. I don't know much about it. I was actually kind of interested to try it based on this article, you know, ironically.
Yeah.
Help but, Square Enix.
But I really want a Sleeping Dog sequel and a Tomb Raider sequel. And Tomb Raider sequel is probably inevitable with this engine and
it's
stuff.
It's big enough.
Yeah.
That's
such a huge investment already. They have to try
it's big to fail
and make more out of it. Yeah. Anyway, any more news?
The bunch of little things.
All right. Yeah. How about your things?
There was Easter, chocolate bunny ears.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What? you already mentioned Strip Search. Fucking love that show.
Show's great.
Like, it has that like homespun, low budget feel that makes it personal, but at the same time, it's not like any other reality show I've watched. Uh-huh. And all the people on it seem nice, and they were not picked to cause drama. They were picked probably because they actually have talent as artists instead.
Did we talk about this on the show before?
No, we didn't.
Okay, let's explain what it is.
So, Strip Search is Penny Arcade's reality show, where it's much like say like last you know the next Top Model, where they're basically trying to find the next. You know, strip cartoonist, you know, so they got
the next webcomic.
The next webcomic cartoonist. Yeah. So they're trying to find the next Penny Arcade, I guess. So they got like, I think 12 people, you know, put them in a house, make them do challenges, have them, you know, pick other people to go to meet
an
the creators.
Challenge.
Yeah, an elimination challenge where they meet the creators, i.e. Mike and Jerry from Penny Arcade, and they have 90 minutes to draw a comic strip based on a single idea from the basket of
Forgotten Dreams.
Two ideas.
Yeah. So, yeah, they each choose an idea, they each do their own thing, and then Mike and Jerry choose the best one and send the other person packing. And they're funny, they're great, and they totally fuck with the contestants as they're drawing the whole time, which
15 minutes
until you have an hour left.
Of time that you have another 20 minutes have passed.
Like one of the contestants, you know, came back twice, and they like said, so, you know, why does the whole house hate you so much, or why do you suck at this game so badly? Like, they're kind of brutal. It's
they
funny.
They act like they're the evil judges from the other shows that, even though they're super nice guys.
Yeah. They're clearly making a joke out of
it. And also, what I love is that when the person, whoever gets kicked out, they go and sit in a car, and Mike and Jerry come, and they talk to them, and they bring them up, and they actually say, wow, you know, this was a tough choice, but you really have talent, and
here's,
you know,
what
I love what you're doing.
You.
Yeah, like, it's really constructive. There's just so much love. I feel like, you know, no one is going to actually end up hating anybody else, and I don't know. I feel good about that, so I enjoy it.
It's a great show.
It's really good.
It's free and online. Come on.
We did have a long conversation over IM about
one of the episodes not being as good.
About some of... Well, for me, it's more than just one. I really like the episodes that Mike just described, where they kind of have... They have been doing them in these little three-episode arcs. They kind of have a bad one, and then a better one, and then a really good one. And the bad one is like some dumb challenge. Like, one of them was going on a duck tour and
remembering facts about the city.
Remembering facts over. Yeah. And that one doesn't seem to go anywhere, and I don't know why those episodes are there. And then there's a good one, which is like an elimination challenge. And some of the elimination challenges have been draw what... another of the cartoonists is describing to you without seeing what they are describing.
Yeah.
That one was cool. They did one that was tweeting, right? Had tweet responses to people.
Yeah,
you know,
trolls.
Like, yeah, to like, in effect, to trolls or to just like manage your brand via Twitter.
Yeah.
That one was kind of interesting. They did one that I thought was kind of boring, which was the interview one. That was the weaker one of that little three-episode arc. So they kind of... I don't like that first one where it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't have any relation to the elimination challenge one. Like, it's just kind of an extra episode. I feel like it would be better if it was elimination challenge, elimination episode, elimination challenge, elimination episode, instead of this extra one that's in there.
And I don't know. I just
that
find,
part of the pacing is,
yeah,
is kind of.
I just like it because, I mean, they're 20 minutes long, and I don't know. I find it interesting because the contestants are interesting, and I just like it because it's different. It's not like any other reality show.
Yeah.
It is different. So that's.
Yeah, they're all nicer, too. None of them are dicks.
Yeah. I'm not here to make friends. There's none of that.
Yeah.
Although there specifically is one of that, and they cut to it very obviously. They have one person who's like obviously making a joke about everyone always says this, so I'm going to say it. I'm not here to make friends, and then they like cut it in like that. But it's
have you seen the "I'm not here to make friends" supercut from reality shows?
I can imagine it.
A 3-minute supercut of like every 3 seconds, someone saying that. That literally gets said multiple times every reality show. It's insane. In sad news, Roger Ebert died, and that totally blows because he was a great writer. I didn't always agree with his opinions on movies, but I always respected his writing, and it was always interesting to read. You know, he's the guy that was, you know, that basically deemed video games never being able to be art, which stirred up the internet pot with everybody. But, you know, he's...
And then he was trolling to the bitter end, like saying, didn't he just say, like, in the last week before he died, he said, I'm actually going to make a video game, or he said... what did he say?
I don't remember that.
There was totally an article about it last week. I need to look it up.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Onion had the perfect article to send him off, which, and the headline was, Roger Ebert hails human existence as, quote, a triumph.
Yeah.
Very lovely, very heartfelt, still funny.
The Onion is at their, really at their best when they're doing their more poignant pieces.
Yeah.
Their, one of their post 9/11 pieces was, the headline was God angrily clarifies don't kill rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so amazing. It's the Ebert one is excellent. Everyone should read it. You know, it's probably only 300 words, but it's fabulous. But yeah, it's just like the 9/11 one was very funny, also incredibly poignant. And they really do that quite well, you know, excellent. Yeah. Ebert was an interesting guy because, you know, just like, the voice of the common man when it came to film reviews, as opposed to someone like A.O. Scott or, you know, the Slate, you know, culture critics and stuff like that, Salon, etc. They all tended to be more like New York indie minded. You know, a lot of film critics are that way. Like, you know, nothing's ever quite good enough. You know, Ebert loved him some blockbuster films and kind of, you know, he's based out of Chicago. He's a different kind of guy. I don't know who takes that role on, but also interesting because he did seem to have this blind spot about video games, mm-hmm. right? And whether it was simply a generational thing or, you know, someone whose opinion I was so sort of in sync with when it came to movies, just like totally didn't see this other thing that, you know, whether it was he never played, you know, one of these fabulous games or whatever it was, he just seemed to have this blind spot. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that was his opinion.
Yeah, it was just...
Two other kind of sad things, not nearly that sad, but Rock Band 3 DLC finally ended after wow. putting out like 4,000. I think it was 2,000 plus official DLC, and then there's like 4,000 Rock Band Network, which wow. are user submitted songs.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for like 6 straight years or something like that, crazy. And they put out their last song on April 2nd, so Dang. It was previously this week. And very fitting, American Pie by Don McLean, which is, you know, the day the music died. So
yeah,
and all the harmonics people from the company, they got together and they did a video where they all played it and they sang like the chorus to the end. It was pretty poignant. Like, I definitely have not really played Rock Band, you know, really much at all in the past several years, let alone I haven't downloaded any DLC, but that's still an amazing accomplishment. And that game is still fucking awesome, even when I do play it. And the determination and dedication to putting out new songs every week for like 6 years is pretty
So how much money
impressive.
Can you spend on Rock Band DLC if you bought all of it?
That's an excellent question.
Oh, God. Well, I think...
Is it 99 cents a song?
It's got to be thousands.
Well, it depends on whether it has the pro... tracks or not, like the pro guitar and pro uh-huh. keyboards,
are like $2.
Those are extra, so it's anywhere from like $1 to $3, I think, per song. That's depending right. on
Some
it
so you could two. Probably spend like $5,000 on At Rock least. Band if you wanted to.
Yeah, maybe more
than that, like maybe wow. 10 more. 15. Yeah, I know I've spent at least 100 or so, probably more than that, maybe a couple hundred.
Now, did they say this is definitely the last one ever, or was it just the last of the regular updates?
I mean, it's possible they could do more, but this is the end of the regular updates. They're not going to put out any more DLC updates.
They might.
I think they're working on a new IP, or at least a new game. In the
Yeah, they have
rhythm,
said
so.
They're working on like two or three new IPs. They just haven't announced any of them yet.
So,
yeah,
there you go. It's done.
Probably no Plastic Instruments, I would guess.
I don't know. It's hard to predict what they're going to do next. They are really talented folks.
Yeah.
They are a company that I would love to work for.
They're good at peripherals. They have a bunch of amazing musicians on staff. Yeah. They make good
They're in
games.
Boston, right?
Yeah, but they're in fucking Boston, so...
I don't know.
And I mean,
they gave up their whole franchise and then, like...
Made a better
destroyed
one.
Destroyed it again.
Totally,
but,
yeah.
Not financially, but they made something way better.
Yeah.
Like, who knows if they could do that again? That would be amazing.
I mean, like, the era of Plastic Instruments, I think, has... It's been going steadily down for a while, so they got to do something new, but it should be interesting.
You want to talk about that... the Microsoft creative director tweet about people needing to get
shitting on the people who live in rural areas basically like come on people get an
funny.
Internet connection.
I don't need to I mean the gist is that Microsoft has not announced their next Xbox yet.
Mm-hmm.
Sony announced the PlayStation 4 at this point, it feels like, more than a month ago. And I think Microsoft is still 1 or 2 months away. They might not do it until May or
till E3.
When's E3? June?
Late May.
Late May. Anyway,
something like that. Yeah.
So this whole in between period, everyone is like getting more and more excited for the PS4. It seems like most people were impressed that PS4 is making it easier on developers. That the hardware, it looks powerful and has lots of input options.
Yep.
And they're just catering to indies, and it's like easy to program for because it's basically just a PC, and like everything is positive and good and in Sony's favor right now, and everyone is talking just negatively about the unannounced new Xbox mm-hmm. for months with no response. They're just like, we have not made an announcement yet. We are not commenting on rumors, and so the negativity going around is that the Xbox might be required to be online on the internet at all times to function at all. Like,
there have been
DRM
persistent
mechanisms.
Rumors about this.
Persistent rumors where, like, some people with dev kits say that is how it is.
Yeah.
And but unconfirmed sources, anonymous, because they're under NDAs, I'm sure. And so apparently the director of
creative director
at yeah. Microsoft got kind of fed up and tweeted irritated and said, "What's all this nonsense? Or why
I don't see what the big deal is?
What yeah. the big deal is yeah. about
hashtag meeting, deal with it, literally
yeah. needing an always on connection,
and then got into a fight with." Like other pretty well respected, not just random people.
It was I think it was Manveer Hare, who works at BioWare, was a guy who responded yeah. to him. Yeah,
and he basically gets in a Twitter fight with him, like yeah. calling him whiners and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't have the quotes right in front of me, but it's just funny because Microsoft is not learning their lesson, and they're not like handling this situation very well. Mm-hmm. They're just feeding the negative feedback. Cycle of disinterest in the new Xbox, so it's going to be really hard to turn opinions around when they do announce it.
Yeah, you got to make the case for why that's good, right? And you can make the case. You can point to reasons why it's good to need an internet connection, and why that can actually be good for consumers. And they're not doing it at all. You know,
I mean, Valve basically had to do it with Steam at some point,
and they fought that battle.
Steam
and
was hated,
won.
And now everybody fucking loves Steam.
They won that battle.
Yeah, yeah.
I just hit a guitar.
Sweet, official.
Yeah, yeah. But they're basically ignoring the negativity instead of responding to it.
Right.
And it feels like a problem from this end. We'll see if they all surprise us with their announcement.
Yeah. Also, LucasArts got shut down by Disney, and the projects like Star Wars 1313,
yeah,
which looked interesting. I heard that it's halted. It may not be canceled. They may outsource it to like a different company. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they shut it down at all, which they're mainly known at least nostalgically for making, you know, some of the best like graphic adventures for PC ever, yeah. like Secret of Monkey Island and Loom and Maniac Mansion. There was a very good GDC Maniac Mansion postmortem by Ron Gilbert that I watched recently that I highly recommend. So that's weird. I mean,
it's crazy.
I don't really know what their reason, unless it just wasn't making money anymore, yeah. and so they shut it down. But it kind of, I don't know, it's that happened, and I don't know what that means. I don't know what Disney's master plan is, but obviously they're making
it's
moves
to make fucking Star Wars movies and merchandise the shit out of stuff,
but not games or yeah. not internally or something. I guess I don't know. So that's all the news I got.
Yeah. All right. How are your weeks? Like, or your fucking months? Like, how were things? Did you do things that were interesting? Charles?
No. No. This is the thing about like having a child is like most weeks are basically the same.
I don't even have a child. And I
go anywhere
way,
or do any so. Fun things. So one cool thing I did is went to Raki Raki, which Josh introduced me to,
yeah.
which is a bomb-ass ramen noodle restaurant in San Diego, which we still haven't gotten Mike to go to, but you totally should go there. We should go there for lunch
good.
One day.
They have chicken-based ramen broth.
Yeah, man. It's good. This place is in Kearny Mesa, like on Convoy, which should normally, for those of you not from San Diego, should make it a total hole in the wall, like of very disputable quality. Like
or super authentic.
Sometimes excellent, sometimes yeah. not excellent, right? This place looks like it was picked up from the gas lamp and dropped yeah. in. Like it has, it's the first, or, yeah, yeah, the first restaurant in Convoy, Kearny Mesa, that's not a chain like Islands or something, that has like a really great considered interior design and like a nice theme to it. And
are they new? Is this yeah, a new? Yeah. So yeah, are they trying, is this a move to raise the land to,
they're
value around
raising
Kearny Mesa?
The stakes okay. for how nice a restaurant can
that's
be
cool.
in,
I like
in
that.
Kearny Mesa.
It'd be interesting to see tonight because I've just gone during lunch hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm.
But yeah, it's great.
And the food is really good. Really good.
And inexpensive? Like fast food cheapness?
No, it's a little, it's like a dollar or two more than, oh, okay. than other ramen places. Maybe a dollar more.
Okay.
Yeah. But they have like an $8 lunch special that's good. Yeah. Raki, R-A-K-I, R-A-K-I.
Yes.
Yum.
Raki, Raki.
Mm-hmm. I started listening to a shitload of math rock after Josh recommended This Town Needs Guns.
Yeah, how about that?
I listened to that whole album.
That's weird. I would not consider them math rock because I listened to that album and they're not nearly crazy enough to be math rock.
You need to look up math rock because...
No, I've heard you guys talk about it before and stuff, but I just don't know exactly which things to categorize as it and which not to.
I would put them in that category. It's just basically weird time signatures.
I love weird time signatures.
Yeah. And there are like harder or less hard versions. They would be on the soft side of math rock, you know.
Well, I just call that Tool like.
Yeah, like Battles. They're a very accessible math rock band.
Okay. Yeah. Love Battles.
Yeah.
So I listened to the whole this time the 13.0.0.0 album. Listened to the whole thing of that.
Zero.
Yeah, I missed a zero.
Point zero, right.
Then I went to 8 tracks and just looked for mixes that included This Town Needs Guns and listened to those. There's one on there called Calculus. Just look up on 8 tracks, look up this.
How much more math rock can you get?
Totally. Look up the mix titled Calculus. And
sounds awesome.
That's awesome. It's just like, you know, 30 different math rock bands.
Have you listened to Battles?
Good times. No.
You need to listen to Battles.
Oh, you fucking need to listen to Battles.
Battles is the shit.
I listen to it because I'm way into math rock right
now. Yeah, because I like Battles way more than This Town Needs Guns.
Yeah, okay. This Town Needs Guns was good, but not amazing.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah. I just hadn't heard like that style with that technique.
Yeah.
Is Battles more or less emo?
There's no vocals.
Yeah, it's all instrumental.
Like, way more interesting instrumental.
Well, there are some vocals, but they're minimal. Weird. They're weird, yeah.
Cool.
I listened to Jamie Liddell.
Liddell.
Sorry.
His new album, whatever it is.
It's self-titled. It's Jamie Liddell.
Jamie Liddell.
Exactly. And it's good. It's like other Jamie Liddell recently in the last few. But there is one in particular, one track, I think it's track number 2. I'll double check and then post the link. That is just, it's really, really good. Like, it's just a pop song. It is just a pop song. It's like not complex. But the sound, the characteristic, the timbre, you just like, if you had to describe it, it'd be like really hard to describe. It's just, it sounds unique and neat and new.
Cool.
You know, I fucking love new sound.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Did you listen to that David Byrne St. Vincent song?
What was that one?
The David Byrne St. Vincent song, I Should Watch TV, that I recommended in the last show 3 weeks ago.
I think I missed it.
Yeah, you should listen to that because it's totally a new weird sound.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Check it.
I've
been listening to their whole album, and the rest of their album is more conventional and more kind of just like cool, you know, horns. It's like not upbeat horns. It's like horns if they were
sad horns.
Not like depressing, but just like not like boppy poppy ska kind of horns, right?
Uh-huh.
But the rest of the album's pretty good, but that song is like this weird little outlier that's like really funky and really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Music?
No, I haven't listened to anything 'kay. Interesting.
I also got a Pogo plug. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
This is a thing that's like...
Can we talk about this with young children listening?
It's like a small computer, basically. It's kind of like a Raspberry Pi, if you know what that is.
Yeah.
Except it's a consumer version. It's not directly for hackers. All it is a little plastic box with a network port on it and a few USB ports on it, and it plugs in to power. And so what you do if you use the stock firmware is you like give it an internet connection and then plug a hard drive into it, and then it makes your hard drive a NAS, a network attached storage, that you could hit either from your network or from the cloud if you log into their web server. And like one user's free, but then of course they want you to pay for a subscription for like more features and cloud space and stuff. But basically, little thing, plug a USB hard drive into it and the internet into it and leave it on, and it's like probably 10 or 15 watts or something, like really minimal, and then access your files in the cloud. But instead of like Dropbox that limits you to 5 gigs free, etc., like you could plug a terabyte into this, or you could plug 2 4-terabyte drives that are now less than $150 each into the back of one of these little $15. I got this thing for $15 and plug it into the back of this thing, and then access like 4 or 8 terabytes of your shit from away from home over the internet. Isn't that insane? Like, this thing is fucking cool. I love
it.
So what I did
with the firewalling issues, like, how's that work?
So what it does is it talks to their web server.
Okay.
And it connects out. So it doesn't need like crazy firewall rules.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And everything's like kind of routed through their web server.
So theoretically, their web server could go down, but then your cloud storage service could go down.
Yeah,
so,
you access everything remotely by logging into their web page, mm-hmm. and then you see all your files at home in their web page.
Gotcha. It's and just, bounces it off
so,
that server.
So they're definitely having like server services, but they are not storing all your files, so they don't have like masses of hard drives like Dropbox does.
Right. Cool.
Right? So they give you the free service by just buying the device like indefinitely, but they really encourage you to pay them for more features mm-hmm. with a subscription. So you can see how they, it's like a free to play anything.
Cool.
So I love it, but you can also like root it and put Linux on it and then like Webmin, like web administer it and then put whatever you want on it. You can run LAMP, MySQL, PHP,
Linux Apache,
like mm-hmm. you can run your web servers from it, you know, and just put it on the internet and you can do whatever, man. It's
so
cool.
Basically just networkifies a hard drive.
Yeah, but when you, like, when you put your own thing on, when you put Linux on it, it's you do whatever you want with it.
It's
and
a little
it's with an Raspberry Pi. Right, okay.
It's an ARM chip.
Yeah.
Some little ARM
it's
processor.
Like ARM something, exactly.
Cool.
With 500 megs of RAM or 256 megs of RAM or something. Yeah. So you just put some shitty
and
little Linux
how big
on it.
Is it? Like,
you know, the pictures made it look minuscule.
Yeah.
But it was actually a lot bigger than I thought. But once it's on your shelf, like next to your router or something.
Yeah.
It's only as big as like an upright router or cable modem, but a little thicker.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's plastic, solid state, no fans. Is it, you know, with just some ventilation holes. And so it's not really a big deal. But it is a little bigger than I expected.
Like, 5 inches
like
by
2.5 inches thick instead of 1 inch thick. And, you know, 5 inches tall instead of 3 inches tall. But it doesn't really matter. It's tiny and low power.
Very cool.
I fucking love that thing. It's cool. I had to mention that.
That's neat.
All right. No more weak stuff?
I've been watching... I watched, rather than buying it, I watched a Let's Play of the entire StarCraft II campaign.
Nice.
So I watched...
Oh, did you not play the entire StarCraft II campaign?
I did not buy Heart of the Swarm. And
the first one I played
and really enjoyed.
And yeah, I'm curious, how did you enjoy that more or less than actually playing it?
And why didn't you buy it? I thought you'd be all over that.
Yeah,
I just have other, like, I was in the middle of Tomb Raider, but
games.
It was out
and you didn't want to wait 6 months.
I didn't want to like bother, and those games never go on sale,
right?
Like Blizzard, I mean, like another 3 years from now after they have released
it'll
the Protoss campaign. And then another, like, 10 months after that, they'll release, like, a battle chest that has all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't want to wait 6 years. So I watched Day 9's playthrough of the whole campaign. And that's fun. It's cool.
Yeah. StarCraft's meant for watching.
Just every, like, every game has the same plot now. Like, every game that's set, Halo, StarCraft 2, Mass Effect 3, they all have the same plot. It's all the same fucking, like...
You listen to too much Giant Bomb.
They have the same plot, dude.
You mean it's just Star Wars like over and over and over again?
It's
essentially,
it's just like the you know, older alien race and yet further older alien race that was affecting that one and a threat to the galaxy. Like, it's all the same stuff.
Mm.
It's totally a lot of the same stuff.
You got
anyway?
Yeah, read books instead.
But
right?
That was good.
Yeah,
that's really good.
No, and I want to thank you for recommending watching. Day 9's Let's Play of the new SimCity.
Yeah.
It was very fun to watch him, like, madly make... he plays SimCity, like, with such a fervor and, like, devil may care. Like, I'm just gonna build 8,000 fucking circular roads. Oh, I ran out of money. All right, I gotta wait. All right, where's the hour? Ah, there's more money. Okay. And he's like, he has like the thing he wants to build, like waiting and hovering until his money like comes in.
Because
and...
he plays it like he plays StarCraft. And
yeah,
that's exactly
he does. Oh
what
my God.
You,
and I was totally
StarCraft.
Seeing the similarities.
He's like, I'm doing
them.
A build right now. Yeah. Like, I've got to keep my, the whole thing with StarCraft is like, you have to keep your money low.
Yeah.
Because if you have a big bank, then it means that you haven't efficiently spent the money that you have.
Yeah.
And so you essentially weren't planning ahead.
It was that, he was playing it like an RTS. It was actually quite amusing.
Yeah.
I liked it.
That's funny.
Let's Plays are great, man. I love Let's Plays.
Yeah, he and another... there's like 10 episodes of that SimCity one.
There was. I watched like two of them. I didn't get through it all.
Like, starting in episode 4 or 5, he and another pretty famous StarCraft II caster get on Skype together, and they essentially race to 100,000 citizens, and that's kind of fun to watch, because they have a terrible start where they both totally screw up and can't figure out how to do it, and they have to like start all over and do it again. It's yeah, it's funny.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna plow through some movies. Are we ready for that?
Ready.
Okay. Ready. 5 stars. Zero Dark Thirty.
Mm-hmm.
That shit was amazing.
It was nominated. So.
This is the Osama bin Laden one.
Jessica Chastain and
And Catherine Bigelow directed.
Right, the Hurt Locker.
And she did Hurt Locker. I also watched Hurt Locker. 5 stars.
I really want to see that. Yeah,
fucking total phenomenal.
If you had to choose one or the other to watch,
you know what? Like Hurt Locker came first, but I watched it second. But I kind of like Zero Dark Thirty better, maybe.
Oh.
Do you want more fiction or do you want more reality?
Maybe? I want better movie.
Like they're both historical fiction. They both feel like they could be basically 100% real. But then I honestly don't know exactly where to draw the line between these characters were embellished or written into a script for nice movie making.
Mm.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're so well, they're both super well done.
Zero Dark Thirty at least purports to be about actual events. Hurt Locker is a dramatization of what it might be like to be in the war. And it's like a very accurate one, but it's not any one particular person. It's not the story of someone.
Mm-hmm. But in Zero Dark Thirty, I wasn't sure if the main character, like how much that was an actual character and how much...
From what I've read, it's like an amalgamation of a couple of different people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You could tell it, like she seemed a little bit too true to movie making, like character situation, like couldn't be real entirely.
It's an Argo type situation. It's like some stuff is dramatized.
Yeah. But Zero Dark Thirty, maybe a little bit better. 5 stars. It was fucking. They're both sweet as hell.
Cool,
but also intense and crazy because it's like Jesus Christ, this is real. This is our government.
Yeah,
these are our soldiers. And wow.
Yep.
Speaking of which,
yeah, Catherine Bigelow. Wow, she's amazing.
Crazy government stuff. I'm like on chapter 9 of House of Cards, so I'm getting nice. Close. It's good. I like it a lot.
Yep. Nice.
Recommend.
Also, Argo. I thought it was good. 4 stars.
Yep.
You know, I don't know.
Not if, best picture
if
worthy
I only
though.
Just didn't give it 5 because I watched it immediately after Zero Dark Thirty. But yeah, it's good. I don't think it's best picture of the year. That sounds crazy. There must have been more better movies last year.
That's what I thought.
But it's good. It was a good movie.
Yeah, it's a all good right. movie.
Horrible Bosses.
That looked terrible.
It was all right. It was kind of funny. Not that great.
So Jason Sudeikis, right?
That's 5 stars.
Sudeikis was
three.
I didn't say it yet. Did I say it? Anyway,
you didn't say stars.
At least Mike predicted it was three.
I saw your list earlier. So
okay. Jason Sudeikis was the best part. He was really good. Like he needs to be in more movies, and he needs to be the lead in more movies. He's great. It's kind of annoying. But still watchable. 3 stars. Inglourious Basterds, this is Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Nazis and also historical fiction. It was really good. I don't know. Quentin Tarantino's awesome usually.
No, that movie's excellent.
Yeah.
It's very good. Least of which because of Christoph Waltz, who's basically just performs an entire one act play at the beginning of that movie. That whole farmhouse scene is fucking phenomenal. That would
he's
like
amazing in every
an
scene,
Academy Award winning short film if it were just that.
The only reason I don't give it 5 stars is that like Quentin Tarantino just always does this thing where most scenes are just a little bit longer than they really need to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe because he's a little bit too full of himself and can't stand to pare down the stuff in the editing room. I'm not sure exactly the reasons. They're still good, but they just feel a little long.
I feel like Quentin Tarantino's number one skill might actually be casting. I think he's probably
he's so good
at picking like random people who you would not expect and plopping them in roles that you wouldn't expect and then like drawing these amazing performances out of them.
That's true.
All his movies are interesting at worst.
Yeah.
That's the thing with him. They are all worth watching like cuz they're just you know, he has such a strong director hand, you know, like you can tell, "Oh, this is a Tarantino movie," you know? So
yeah, well, the funny thing is, I don't know how long it would have taken me to figure out that was Tarantino if I didn't know it. That would have been interesting. About halfway through, maybe. Hmm. I don't know. The Fighter, 5 stars. That movie is great. This is Mark Wahlberg and American Psycho Machinist. What's his name?
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale is amazing. That guy's just unbelievable.
It's the story of Irish Mickey Ward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Movie's real good. Real damn good.
Rural
good. The Hangover Part 2, meh.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm
going to call that one.
I have fondness in my heart for the first one. I wanted the second one to be as good, but it was just...
There's no way it was going to be as good.
Well, you're getting another one.
Literally just like remaking it. Pretty dumb.
They're doing number three.
I wrote 3 stars down, but I'm tempted to push it down to 2.
Ooh.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
That was the stop motion...
Roald Dahl.
Yes.
Roald Dahl one.
Roald Dahl stop motion. But it's a Wes Anderson movie is what it is. Yep. Like, all that other stuff is irrelevant almost to the extent that it's just...
It's a Wes Anderson
movie. It is a Wes Anderson movie. It happens to be stop motion animation and Roald Dahl. Like, it's hilarious that... Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Dig it. 4 stars.
Do you guys see the Conan O'Brien sketch where they were showing... I think they did a couple of them where they were like... Other directors who would be good for the or like the director's audition tapes for the role of the new Star Wars director. So
I feel like you've brought this up before. This sounds
I don't
familiar.
Know if I did it on the show, but I definitely linked it to you guys at one point. So it was like, what would it be like if Wes Anderson directed Star Wars?
Yeah.
It's really cute, really funny.
Yeah, he's great. Everything he does though seems exactly like he did it. Also,
yeah,
Watchmen.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be like Avengers, but better.
No.
But no, it was like...
Not
good? It was Avengers, but darker, and also not great. I don't know.
That's an awesome comic, but the movie was pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, 3 stars. I wanted to like it more, but I was like, I don't get this.
It's not a particularly likable
This is not
movie.
My thing. I didn't get it.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it was one
is
of the
something
first...
for fans more than casual watchers?
It's definitely for fans.
Yeah.
That was one of the first comics that was like quite dark, you know, quite, you know, kind of like ruining your or just like flipping the script on what a superhero was.
Did you read the comics?
Yeah. I have the graphic novel. It's really good.
I don't understand why like they love the comedian. Like why'd they have to love the dickhole?
Sometimes dickholes need love, man.
Never mind, that's a long discussion. Lincoln. It was good.
Yeah.
4 stars.
Well done.
Yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis is Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, it's good. Megamind. That shit was really good.
Animated Will Ferrell, Tina Fey.
Yeah, 4 stars. It's like a Pixar movie, but it was DreamWorks and Will Ferrell and Tina Fey and Jonah Hill and Brad Pitt. And yeah, that was great. That shit was funny. I love Will Ferrell, man. All right, that's my movie list.
Nice.
And I watched the first episode of Homeland. Now I know what that's about.
I've heard such good things about that.
I've heard good things about the first season.
I watched it immediately after watching Zero Dark Thirty, and I was like, oh, this is Zero Dark Thirty, the series,
right,
on a lower budget made by Showtime or something.
Yeah.
I don't know who made it. So, yeah, Showtime. It's good. But if you want, like, super condensed, amazing Homeland, watch Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay. That Homeland's the one with Clara Danes, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. She of my so-called life fame.
All right, are we going to games? Ready?
Let's do some games.
What'd you play?
I finished Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
You finished Tomb Raider also, right?
I'm literally like an hour away from the end, okay. I'm pretty sure, and I moved on to Defiance. I'll get to it shortly, though.
Yeah. We already talked about that game in depth, so I don't have to say much more other than the ending lives up to the rest of the game. It's very...
Wow, that's awesome. That almost never happens.
That's
hard. Most people complain about the ending never being as good as the game. It's always like somewhat of a letdown.
It's a satisfying ending.
Yeah. That's good.
It's a good ending. That's ends impressive. The way it should. Yeah.
With her being like brutally torn in two by something, right?
Right.
Blood splat. The end.
I have a tiny bit more to say. I like after playing a lot more through it, you know, almost the whole thing. It's interesting how, like, I'm a little frustrated about its super violence and stuff like that, and I complain that they added a lot more combat scenes and stuff. But honestly, like, totally objectively, from a gamer's point of view, if you, like, ignore whether or not the story makes sense, etc., like, the game is actually really well balanced between exploring and climbing and looking for secrets and figuring out puzzly stuff and combat sequences that are actually fun and some cutscenes and quick time events and stuff. Like all the spacing and pacing between those things, like they are pretty balanced and they jump from one to the next in a good way. I think I don't know exactly which scenes you were, or I disagree with you at least, if I do know which scenes you thought were like too much combat and too hard, because I thought the combat scenes were like perfect and great.
And, so I think that at the time that we had just spoken, I had just experienced two scenes that I found annoying, one in particular that I had to replay a bunch of times, and then I never had that again for the rest of the game. Okay. So they're basically, in my mind, two scenes that the level design or the checkpointing could have been a bit better. Overall, I think you're right. I think they do strike a good balance as far as needing to release the game to a mass market. Personally, I would have preferred a little bit less of, you know, the shooting and gunplay. You know, if you change two of those sequences out to be stealth, there's a couple of really good stealth sequences, and
that's
personally,
right.
I would have preferred that, but that's just
right.
a preference
thing. They balanced, a bunch of different gameplay types. Yeah. Like, the stealth amount is perfect. And when you're like, when you're stealthing as her, I feel like you're super engaged in the, in the story of her, like really wanting to not get spotted by these dudes and stuff like that. Unlike most stealth games where it's like way too much stealth and fucking annoying. All that stuff I think is pretty great. But I do agree that it would be a fantastic game with like way less combat. Mm-hmm. Like all the previous Tomb Raiders, I think they're good games, and I kind of miss that because the exploring is kind of like my favorite part.
Yeah,
but the combat is really good, and the weapon upgrades and stuff are cool, and whatever.
I kind of felt like the weapon upgrades didn't make a big difference. Like I didn't feel a huge difference in gameplay for having a one weapon upgrade. You know,
you know what? There's probably not enough of like.
It's not like you have a big difference in how you play the game when you have slightly more damage dealing, you know. That part was fine, you know, but...
Maybe they're an illusion or whatever, but...
I feel like Tomb Raider is not the only game that falls to that.
No, I agree,
I think there's a lot of games where the upgrade system is almost kind of like a distraction, and it really doesn't make a huge difference in the gameplay.
I don't want to, like... I don't know if it's spoilers to talk about the specific upgrades. Does that matter? Is that spoilers?
Minor weapon and system upgrade spoilers for Tomb Raider.
All right. Like, I fucking love the fire arrows. Those are rad.
Yeah,
that's a significant upgrade.
That's a big
difference. Because then you start lighting everything in the distance on fire. Mm-hmm. I fucking love that, like, climbing up ropes with a black and tackle upgrade.
That's not a weapon upgrade.
Not directly, but it's super rad. It's an upgrade. It's like functional.
I talked about how great the traversal options were. And
the traversal upgrades are rad.
Yeah.
The ice pick climbing thing is rad.
Fucking cool, yeah.
The kind
of shoot an arrow across into the post, you know, build your own path thing.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's
all
very
those,
cool.
I didn't see all those coming.
Is that something that you can only do at specific points, or you can do anywhere...
specific points.
Oh, okay.
You can't do
it. So it's like Zelda where you have like a hook shot and you can only hit it at a certain place.
Totally. And it's like Metroid where like here's a wall that you can't get through. God damn it, why can't I open this door? Oh, I probably have to wait until I get an ability in like an hour and then come back.
Yeah.
So
it's not like Just Cause 2 where you can like latch onto anything.
No.
Which it should be because that's awesome.
It's pretty good.
Anyway.
And you like tug rope things with your arrows and I don't know. I guess the weapon upgrades are... just cosmetic and illusory, but they feel cooler.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know,
the bow looking like way fucking sweeter.
Yeah.
And then getting
the
like,
bow is the one
the
that has the biggest
competition compound
difference.
Bow and then the weight on it.
The bow
then...
is the one that has the biggest set of differences and really does make a difference.
You super notice when you can charge it longer. You
absolutely.
Totally notice when it.
But like getting a padded stock for your shotgun really doesn't make a gameplay difference.
That almost sounds exactly like games that are heavy on loot, like Torchlight or Diablo. There's so much loot, and you're constantly upgrading your loot, and that's a big part of it, but it often doesn't change the way you play the game.
Right.
Like, unless you change weapon types from, like, missile to melee, but...
Yeah.
And it just feels like it's there because it's expected or because people just really like collecting things. Or they like the illusion of upgrading, even though it doesn't really change the game that much.
I didn't
think
it was too much. I liked it. And I thought the five-ish weapons were all pretty balanced. You had a reason to swap between them. I swapped between them all the time just because they were all cool and I liked them all. Or just for a scenario, like some were better for...
Is there a limit on how many you can hold? Or do you,
you only have four weapons throughout the entire game.
Yeah, you
and
get
you
a bow.
You have them at all the whole at
you
the
get
same
them in
time.
Sequence
eventually
over the course
you
of the
get
game.
Them, and,
okay,
then, right. And then they all are balanced: the pistol, bow, shotgun, and assault rifle.
Cool.
Silencers make a big difference.
Yeah, and they do less damage though, so they're balanced.
That
too.
Makes a big gameplay difference. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. Played. That game, and I played, I find myself playing an incredible amount of Pixel Kingdom. Oh my god, I played a lot of Pixel Kingdom. My only gripe with that game, I'm playing it the same way I played Plants vs. Zombies on iOS, which is just like, while listening to podcasts before going to bed, just like jam through, you know, 5 or 6 levels. I actually played the arena up to level 214.
Oh my god.
I had banked 7,000 gold at that point. So I was like, I could have gone for another, like, I was still climbing. I just had to quit.
Was too long.
Yeah.
Have you mentioned this game before? I don't remember this one.
Yeah, Josh brought
it up. Mentioned it once or twice. It's like Plants vs. Zombies, but on Android. It was a Kickstarter, and it's free.
I bought the coin. You may have shown it to me at some point.
And I don't remember, it's like three lanes, like zombies, except you send dudes across in three lanes instead of having static dudes. Okay.
So there's an enemy sending dudes at you. You're sending your guys at the enemy. You choose which guys you want. You can, so there's like a warrior and a gladiator and an archer and a wizard and a healer, right? And right. you send them in sequence. And so it's like, if I send just a warrior, he's going to kill two of those guys, but there are three in the lane. So I'm going to send a warrior and a healer so that he'll make it all the way through.
No, I think you showed it to me last time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's really good.
Cool.
It's basic, but fun. The art is fun. The, you know, there's a couple different like play fields that are all functionally the same, but like different tile sets essentially for different monsters. And yeah, it's really good.
Love it.
Yep. Very
is that,
good.
Is that Android only?
Only complaint.
It was Kickstarter.
Oh, no, it's on iOS. Okay.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I thought it was Android only.
And my only complaint is that you can't mute the music. There is no music option, which I find annoying.
I just mute the whole game usually.
But I'm usually listening to a podcast on my phone.
Is the music especially bad?
No, it's fine. But if I'm listening to a podcast, then...
Can you mute the game and listen to the podcast?
No. There's no game mute option.
There must be like an Android way to do that, to hack it, to like, I wonder.
Like start really the game back
maybe
out.
Maybe you have to root your phone, but
maybe.
I wonder if you could hack that shit to make one app muted.
I put it in as a feature request, and I gave it 4 stars, and I said,
sweet,
you know, add a mute option.
I'm holding your 5th star as ransom.
I am.
I love doing that in Windows. You can mute like Chrome and then...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that game's really good.
Any other games?
Nope.
Any games, Mike?
I got some games. Well, you and I played Antichamber.
We played some Antichamber.
Mm.
We played a fair bit of Antichamber, so that is a mind
fuck.
Effer. Yeah, it's a mind fuck. I will say, I mean, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting game, definitely worth checking out. It was not as mind fucking as I thought it was going to be. It was
the screenshots make it look a little fuckier.
Yeah, it's really a pretty...
It was lacking in mind fuckery.
It was a pretty... It's a pretty standard FPS walk around room with, you know, obviously some odd shit that goes down that you don't expect.
Standard.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, the way that you interact with it is very standard FPS. Like
that's
you just,
true. That
you just
was
don't
not,
have any weapons.
That was not expected. I didn't expect to jump in and go, oh, I'm walking around.
I know
like
exactly what to do. There's nothing weird about this. It's just what you run into that's weird. Yeah. There's no enemies.
That's
it's just
true.
A weird puzzle-ish.
The screenshots,
things.
You're like, Jesus, what is that? Are you flying through tunnels?
Yeah, yeah.
No, so no, you just walk around like Portal.
Yeah.
It's just that you find things and they're cool.
It's more clever than mind fucking. Yeah. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay,
so.
Cool.
My one comment on that is that it's hard to tell sometimes what games will make good single-player co-op games.
Uh-huh.
You know, like...
What is a single-player co-op game?
I mean,
I mean, like,
when we play Sura's Wrath together or something like that, like, one person playing and other people in the room watching and participating.
Ah, I see.
Or trading controllers or whatever. Like, yeah. A lot of games do that really well, like fucking Riven and Mist and stuff. Or Botanicula and Machinarium, and you know, a lot of games do that well. And this one I thought might be like that, so I was really excited to show Mike and Dave Antichamber. But I think it was almost like it harmed the experience. It's probably a better solo puzzle game.
Well, I think the main issue was that we had not played it, and Josh had already played about an hour or so of it, so we were doing stuff that he already knew about. So you can't help but backseat. Drive the game a
but
little
also
bit.
I felt like you were rushing yourself and trying to entertain the people in the room and you know like both directions it was just a little bit weird and
it's a good game to explore on your own and find out
it's a solo experience weird puzzle game
so I went up to OC last weekend for Easter with Robin. We went and stayed with her parents, which we do a lot for Easter. And when we were there, we were actually played some Minecraft Pocket Edition against each other.
Nice.
I hadn't really played that beyond, like, you know, 2 minutes to check it out, but we actually played for several hours. It's pretty legit.
Did you, like, ad hoc Wi-Fi on iPhones?
Ad hoc Wi-Fi. There's actually a hack where you can host a Pocket Edition server on a PC and have people connect to it over Wi-Fi.
And
so it will save. Yeah, persistent. Right, right. Yeah.
Oh, man. I want a hack for that for the Xbox version. I wonder if that exists.
That would probably be harder to pull off, but maybe not impossible.
Live. Yeah, I know.
You have to run a fake live server or something. Yeah.
I know.
It has some bugs. It's not as good as an actual PC server version, but it still works and it's cool.
Yeah.
So that's still that, but my point is that it's pretty legit. It doesn't have everything that regular Minecraft PC has. Like, it doesn't have redstone, because doing freaking crazy programming on your iPad and iPhone maybe is a little too much to handle or something, but still.
And the world is not quite big
enough. The world is much smaller. Like, you get to the end of the world, like, without even trying, so.
Let me mention real quick that I played more Minecraft with the kids a little while ago, and we went to the Nether together. I told Charles a tiny bit about this. Like, I had played on my own a bit, and I was trying to find diamonds, and I spent hours, and then I found some diamonds, and then I immediately died in lava and lost my diamonds, and I was
I hate that. Yes.
So I was playing with the kids, and I was explaining to them how epic and hard to find diamonds are, and they're like, show us where you mine for diamonds. I was like, okay, look at all these tunnels where I did not find diamonds for hours. Here's where I would make the next tunnel, you know, bang, bang, diamonds! Oh my god, there's diamonds! And so we made a diamond pick together, and then I taught them how to harvest obsidian from lava and water, and we had buckets, and then we did that, and then we harvested and built the Nether gate, and then lit it on fire, and then I was like, oh my god, I've never been in the Nether, and I got them so freaked out. Like, they were like, I was like, I don't know what's there, lots of monsters, I don't know. And we got there, and then there's like zombie pigmen, and there's like things like throwing fireballs at us, and it was so amazing. It was like the kids were scared out of their shit. It was great. It was
take them to the end. That will scare the shit out of you. Dragons flying and eating through walls.
Oh, wow, man. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Wait, so there's something beyond the Nether?
There's the end.
Yeah.
You actually have to make a different kind of portal.
Yeah, you go to the Nether and you just harvest more materials from the weird fire monsters there, and then you have to take that stuff and other stuff and put it together to make a weirder portal to the end.
Right, which is basically just a much smaller area. It's sort of like an arena, really, and there's Endermen everywhere, and there's an Ender Dragon, which flies around and has a health bar, and you can try to kill it.
Yeah.
But it's
crazy.
Yeah. I watched a Let's Play of some guys going to the end, and it was crazy.
It was funny.
So the big game that I'm playing right now, the AAA game that I'm playing, oddly enough, I just went to GameStop recently and bought Bioshock Infinite.
Lol.
That's totally not the thing I ever do, but I was out and about.
How many days after it came out?
Like two.
Okay.
Yeah. I do not usually buy a game $60 right off the bat, but I don't know. For some reason, I wanted to buy this one. So yeah. I played about 5 or 6 hours of Bioshock Infinite. The intro is very cool. It really, I like how it sets you up, and I'm not going to talk too much about the actual environment that you can't find out by reading online, but I'm digging it. I'm not sure I'm going to think it's better than Bioshock, because it's very similar in tone as Bioshock, and so it's kind of been done, and that was already done so well that this is, I'm not sure it can live up to it, but the combat is cool. It is one of those games where you feel like it's definitely trying to tell a deeper story, and the combat sometimes can kind of like rip you out of that and kind of make it feel a little like generic first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. You know, you get powers that you can use, and then there's this other feature that's kind of like a power but different, which, you know, it makes the combat interesting. You know, you can only carry two guns at a time. So it's doing that realistic thing. So you have to always make the choice about, you know, which gun you want to have during a certain fight. The, you know, voice acting is really good.
Are you playing the like super crazy hardcore mode, 1984 mode or whatever?
No. You have to beat the game to even unlock that.
Okay.
Although I have heard differing accounts, like some people recommend you totally need to play this game on hard because it makes all the combat way more interesting, and you have to use all your weird abilities and you have to spec right and stuff like that to make it interesting. And I've heard other people, I think it was the Penny Arcade Report guy,
Ben Kuchera.
That said, dude, play this on easy. Like, don't feel like you have to play everything on normal or hard. Mm-hmm. And don't feel bad about yourself for playing on easy, because the important part of this is just the story. Just play the fuck through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see either way. I'm just playing it on normal, and it's, you know, I've died a couple times. It's not that hard, but it's definitely not like, I'm not coasting.
You're not
like
hoarding ammo or anything.
No. I definitely run out of ammo, and I need to use potions, and I need to use my powers. So I think it's pretty well balanced that way. I think it's good. If you liked Bioshock, you'll definitely like this game. The environment is great. The graphics on 360, it's getting like a lot of rave reviews, I think, probably because of the PC. And the 360 looks good. The art design is very good. The art direction is great. But, you know, you get up close to a wall, and, you know, the resolution, you immediately see that
this is a pretty low-res texture.
These are not super high-res textures. And I don't know if that's just because it's on the 360 and only the PC can do high-res. That's maybe why. It doesn't detract from the game that much, but I don't understand. I would not say, oh my god, like, graphics for this game. I would say, oh my god, art design, but I don't know about graphics. It's kind of like your standard. Yeah. I need to play Tomb Raider and compare, because maybe Bioshock Infinite is doing it wrong,
I think Tomb Raider is doing some really smart things with restricting environments.
Yes.
Particularly, I notice it when she's like in one of those little tiny tunnels that she's like wedging her way through. Like, they animate her so well and so realistically it's that amazing. You totally buy the character. Mm. And by being in this little tiny crawl space, they're able to limit the draw distance so dramatically that everything that you see is just amazingly great looking.
It's really, really intelligent design for like when you're outdoors. Like, everything is a bit more efficient, and when you're in close quarters, like,
it's like
everything
perfect
is
reflections
way more detail
and drips, and yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there's probably a big difference just between the fact that this is a first-person shooter, and you never see anything except your hands and the gun you're holding, versus a third-person where your focus is constantly on this animated person, rather than just the world. So, anyway, it's cool. I want to play more of it, for
sorry
sure.
Sorry to totally derail your conversation twice.
That's okay, I'm used to it.
The cover in Tomb Raider is really excellent. To speak about something about the combat that I
don't
like.
Even know what it looks like.
In Tomb Raider?
The cover of the game, like,
no,
on
no,
the shelf?
No, the cover system. The pop-in, pop-out cover.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, like, the cover of the game at GameStop and the
shelf. They do the cover in a way that I've never experienced
before.
Yeah,
no, the game cover is friggin' great. I was mentioning
that.
She seems like you are so engaged with her behind cover.
Yeah, she just takes cover when necessary. Like, that's it.
It's auto cover, you mean?
Pretty awesome. Like, Gears of War invented the kind of third-person cover mechanic.
But it was like snap in, snap out.
And it's like you press a button to engage with cover, and then you are behind cover. You press it again, you pop out of it. Mm-hmm. And then, I guess, Uncharted, you hold a button, and while you're holding it, you are in cover. And then you can move around, and once you let go... You know, it's still button oriented,
and that's kind of like Time Crisis with the pedal,
right? Exactly like that, yeah. And then in Tomb Raider, if there are enemies around, if she is in jeopardy, and there's a piece of cover nearby, then she will use the cover. And if you pull away from it, she'll pull out of the cover and go run somewhere else. But it's just like, yeah, if someone were shooting at me and there was a big, you know, metal crate here, I would fucking get behind it. So she does.
So you're saying that you can't make the wrong decision, which is to get out of cover and put yourself in
danger.
You can.
Yeah, you can. But you can. Here, let me put it a different way. Uncharted 1 might have been one of the first games, at least got praise for Nathan Drake, when he's just like, when you're walking through the game and you're like walking through a hall, he'll like randomly put his hand on the wall sometimes as you're walking by, like a human would do, to just feel your way through an area, right?
Walk past a table, you put your hand on the corner of the table and just like move past it. You know,
like,
what I mean?
Really natural, like fluid, like human interaction with the environment and with the pace at which
rather
you're
than
walking
your model
like
just
it.
Bumping
right.
up against it. Yeah.
Now, like Tomb Raider. Takes that to the complete logical extreme and revolution of that kind of like interactive animation with just playing the game. While you're just walking around, she's constantly doing all kinds of hand motions and body motions with like that are scenario based. So like you're going through a cave and she's like putting her hands on the ceiling. She's like doing stuff with her torch. Like she's kind of like ducking her head when there's gunfire and just kind of like crouching over, even if there's no cover, she's just kind of like crouching and, you know, she's like coughing whenever you're near smoke. She's like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It just, it's more human. It's right. way more animation, way more contextual animation with all these different scenarios. It's like there isn't one static person standing on the screen animation. Yeah, it's not
like a person there or a probably, weight animation.
There are probably like 15 like default stand there animations for her or something, you know, that's depending cool. on the scenario.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, it's built into it. It's like that to the extreme with the cover where so never cover.
It never feels like weird or like the game is taking control of away from you or anything like that.
It's just like I'm running up to something and I need to take cover behind it, and she just does. Hmm. Like it's kind of like actually have you? I don't know if you've heard about the
sounds
way
like that, it's smarter than you are.
The way that you start the Tesla Model S, like the Tesla, that electric car, right? Elon Musk's electric
put
car.
Put your two hands on the steering wheel or something.
You have the key in your pocket. You get in the car. You close the door and put your seatbelt on and put your foot on the brake, and the car is started. And then you just press and you go.
Nice.
Like, if you're in the place where you would be to drive it, you can drive it. And then you can just get out, and then everything parks and locks up as you walk away. Like,
now, awesome. What if you just wanted to get in and...
There's no putting a thing in and turning it.
What if you just get in the car and close the door, but you didn't actually want to start it?
Well, your foot probably isn't on the brake.
Your, foot's on the brake.
Your two hands probably aren't on the brake.
Okay.
Wheel.
All right. Yeah. That's cool.
I don't know.
Eh?
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff is perfectly fine unless, you know, as long as you are a normal human being and do things like they assume you would do and you don't do anything weird. So, yeah. And then one game I'm kind of excited about, I mean, obviously I've kickstarted a ton of RPGs that are much like old styles that are coming back into favor because of Kickstarter. But, and on that same line, except not an RPG, Shovel Knight. That looks really cool. Uh-huh. It's like the...
DuckTales
armored shovel guy game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're rebooting DuckTales, but this is sort of like keeping with the retro theme.
Well, they're not rebooting DuckTales. They're remaking DuckTales, right?
Well, I guess it depends on reboot
it's
means.
Okay. They're remaking the game.
Okay. It's the same exact game, but with higher graphics.
And with like
one
new level or something.
Yeah. So they're doing that, but they're also the Shovel Knight thing is retro
graphics.
But
that means new moon music. And that's like probably
or at least better recorded.
Probably my favorite
non-chiptune moon music. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Shovel Knight looks good. It looks super cute. Yeah. But there were also, geez, like 15 new games that look cute in a similar way. Yeah. There's all these new side-scrollers for Vita or for PC or whatever, like coming up soon that I was excited about.
But how many of them have shovels?
Remember them.
Is
no,
what
that
I'm
one
asking.
Looks exceptionally cute. I agree.
Oh man, Josh, what's the game?
Guacamelee Tuesday.
No, not Guacamelee. the Vita game that's going to be an Android game that's like Tetris plus StarCraft.
Oh yeah,
that looks so big.
Oh, it's a really
what?
Hard name.
Josh is like,
it's a really hard
watch
name.
This video. This game is going to be your jam for sure. And I watch it, and I'm like, oh my god, this game was my jam.
It's Tetris StarCraft.
Yeah,
Tetris Craft.
Star Tris. Amazing. It's like super minimal, like like architectural, pared down StarCraft base building plus. The blocks that you're using to build that base are Tetris pieces.
So you have to play so Tetris awesome. To build your base.
You pretty much build your base. Yeah,
no,
it's not like Tetris blocks are falling down.
It's like isometric. RTS Lite, like some of the ones we've played on XBLA back in the day or whatever, where you start with a very simple little base and then you just expand your base and get some resources and then eventually maybe you make units and do things with them. But your base is the shape of one of those zigzag Tetraminos, and your unit collector is the shape of one of those T Tetraminos, etc. And they're each dedicated colors, so you fit them together as you build your base.
Yeah.
It's really
cute. That's cute.
I'm super psyched about that game.
Yeah.
I'll link it. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah. It's got a weird name.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. That's
any
the
more games?
Nope. That's right, it.
Yeah, I want to play BioShock Infinite too, but the surround sound doesn't work on my old ass motherboard, so either I hope they patch it or I wait until maybe I get a new motherboard. I eventually play it or something. Ugh. The Bridge. I also
I'm interested.
Tried in just the beginning real fast because I have too much to play, but I did just want to try it.
Uh-huh.
And it looks super cool. It's M.C. Escher like black and white pencil drawing art where you just kind of like rotate the world like the what was the
like
paper
Echo Chrome
one? Not exactly. The one that was advertised in Penny Arcade on the side of the screen for a long time. A Walk with Past or... Jeez, I forgot. Anyway, you just rotate the world while your little character walks left and right, mostly. except you're going in and out of weird Escher like
platforms and perspectives bending,
that are kind of hard to see.
Forever staircases. Yeah. And
so that's really cool. I just played the beginning, and I do want to play the whole thing eventually.
Sweet.
We all did. We talk about Starseed Pilgrim a little bit.
We did.
Okay, yeah. that thing's batshit. I only played a few minutes. I want to play that more though. You guys didn't play Ridiculous Fishing yet. God damn, that's on my list.
Well, because I've
really,
played it.
Really,
basically.
Want to play. No, you haven't.
I have. No, I've played haven't. The basic right, game. I know what it's about.
Need to fight about it. I'm really excited about that though. I wish it was on Android right now. I played the Neverwinter beta. That's just an MMO. It's pretty well done, but it's just. It's been done a million times.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a free-to-play, but pretty polished MMO coming up if you need more MMO.
Just play Guild Wars 2, right?
Okay. And Defiance. So, I played the last Defiance beta before retail, like 2 weeks ago or whatever. And this is the one that's made by Tryon Worlds, yep. San Diego. They're in Carlsbad. And they did Rift, and they're doing this upcoming MMORTS called like End War, End Game, something
World
like that.
World of End Warring.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
End.
So this is the one that's like the both an MMO sci-fi shooter and a sci-fi, literally S-Y-F-I, TV show.
Sci-fi.
Simultaneously, essentially, like two IPs in one.
Yeah,
that interact. Even
it's pretty unique, right? I don't think that's ever been
totally.
Done before.
No, it is literally unique.
Yeah. And they're both pretty high budget, and they both are pretty ambitious. Like the TV show looks like it's totally trying to be like Firefly, Deadwood in space, or like post-apocalyptic Fallout, St. Louis. With a bunch
St. Louis,
there's like the arch. Except,
oh right, yeah.
Except
yeah.
the whole city like caved in, and it is like several hundred yards lower than it used to be, or something. I don't know. And there's a bunch of different alien races, like Babylon 5 or Battlestar Galactica or something. The previews look like it's pretty high budget and cool.
Yeah,
apparently
it looks
the people
pretty cheesy,
who watch
though.
It's kind of cheesy. Yeah, yeah. The people who watch the previews say that that. Like, there's so many visual effects and stuff, they're just distracting. Like, it's that high budget, and it's not necessarily necessary. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that looks kind of neat, but also kind of cheesy. But some of the acting looks good, so I'm actually interested. And I can usually put up with some cheese in my sci-fi. Mm-hmm. But the game is a shooter by the Tryon guys, so I was kind of excited, but it also, like, the art direction just looks bad. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of thought it was going to be janky. So I finally tried the beta, and it's fun, but it is janky. So I got super excited for this because it is really fun. And it's like the first MMO shooter that I think is actually successful.
Cool.
Because a lot of the MMO shooters that have been attempted
Guitar.
So far
super official.
Are like just not good in core ways.
Yeah, what are other games that you would even compare this to?
So Firefall is in beta, but it doesn't have as many quests and much of the MMO.
Third person.
So it's Defiance.
This is...
Oh, yeah.
Defiance. They're both
person.
Third person.
Okay.
Yeah, but Firefall doesn't have as much MMO. Like, it doesn't have as many quests and stuff. It's mostly PvP.
Yeah,
right. It just doesn't have as much content. It's not as big of a budget, and it's not out yet. Global Agenda was all right, but kind of janky. Planet Side 2 was mostly about PvP. There were a bunch of others that I've tried betas here and there over the years. There's like all their names I forgot because I just try them real quick. And I'm like, that one's like a little bit of PVE content, or it's like it's laggy, or the shooting is more like turn based. It's not like legit, or the shooting's legit, but it's not a fun game. Like, there's just always problems with them. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pull off. This one has a ton of jank. It's like really buggy and messed up in a lot of ways, but the core is down. Like, the shooting is fun. It's Borderlands. Like, they have a bunch of crazy guns, shoot a bunch of aliens, and it's all the MMO basics are there with the questing and the worlds. And there, instead of mounts, you have vehicles like Borderlands. You drive little quads and stuff around with turbos. There's bigger vehicles where you get a passenger in, and so you can go around. There's only one server. It's like all super intelligently instanced, so you just can play with anybody, whatever you want. You just group with them, and then you teleport directly to them in their instance. Like, that works great. The voice chat was super broken, and the text chat was super broken until the second or third patch, and now there's like auto voice chat in the grouping. Every time you group, you're just voice chatting with whoever's in your group, and it works pretty well now.
Nice.
But there's no push to talk. It's like super simple. Like, not everything is fully featured yet, but all the core is there and works. And the Xbox is, and it launched on all three consoles, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC simultaneously last week.
But can they play with each other?
No. Yeah. And that's not their fault. That's like Xbox and Sony being whiners with their previous experience with a couple other games.
Yeah.
And
now both properties are supposed to influence each other, right? So like,
yeah. So the gist that, like, the reality of that, because it's like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that they've already shot basically the whole first season of the show, mm-hmm. and they're working on the second season. And there are characters that are in the game, because the game takes place in San Francisco mostly,
mm-hmm.
TV shows in St. Louis mostly,
mm-hmm.
but it's the same world at the same time. So the game, you do several missions at the beginning with these two characters that are, like, the main characters in the show.
Uh-huh.
So in the timeline, like, you're doing those quests like a few weeks before the show starts.
Gotcha.
And I think those quests are actually going to expire. They seem like episode based.
Uh-huh.
And cool. Like, I did the four quests with them or whatever. And that's the same voice actors. They look like those actors in makeup.
That's cool.
And, you know, I did those quests with them. And that was pretty cool. And then they're going to like go to St. Louis for the premiere of the TV show, kind of. I don't know if it's going to be exactly synced week to week. I'm really curious. If like,
and they can probably like reshoot a scene or, you know, reshoot the other side of a phone conversation to reflect what happened like that week in the game world.
Now, supposedly some things are totally going to happen like that. Like
the moment,
individual game players are going to be able to be featured in the TV show somehow, like their name or as a cameo or just referenced or something like that. Maybe exactly shoot key scenes later and work them in or something.
Yeah.
But definitely they have like this pre-written script where certain characters from the show jump in and out and into the game, vice versa. So it's kind of interesting. We'll see.
Very ambitious.
We'll see. It's super ambitious. The art direction's a little janky, but it does look really good on PC, and it's just fucking fun. Like, who cares about anything else?
So Defiance, pretty jank, but totally core.
Yeah.
Okay.
Serious.
Got it.
Speaking of sci-fi with some jank in it, but really good.
Hey, sci-fi with jank, it gives a character.
I forgot to mention, but Doctor Who came back. The new season of Doctor Who. Yo, that's good. Good stuff.
So, different doctor?
Same doctor, new companion.
Oh, right. Karen Gillan went away, right?
Yeah. Karen and Rory, or Amy and Rory are gone.
Huh. Interesting.
How's the new companion?
Good. Yeah, it's going to be fun. That show's just fun. It's just fun to watch. Have a good time.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'll ever get as far into it as you are, but.
Yeah, the same way that we're not into Doctor Who, you guys aren't into Defiance, and that's cool.
It's all good, man.
Yep. Yeah.
It's all good. And you went over games?
Yeah.
Tomb Raider. You went over games. I went over games.
That's it, man.
There you go. We could talk about Defiance for another hour. I'm like their dungeons are cool. Like, they have arc falls like Rift. It's like Rifts, man. It's like there's a shallow power curve, and you can multi-spec, and so it's like flat and balanced. Never mind.
We can't get too into the weeds because I don't know what most of that meant.
Yeah.
It's all good.
All right. That was the Escort Mission. Thanks for joining us. We just bullshit the whole time instead of having a main topic, but that was really fun anyway.
Totes.
So, yeah. Cool. Hit us up on our website. Click our Amazon link before you buy stuff. Send us mail so that we can do mailbag and make them do the silly mailbag song some more. and tell us what you want to hear. And I'm leaving for like a month. So
Fun. So there may
be some guest shows and guest hosts, rather.
It'll be interesting what we end up doing.
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
Cool. All
right.
All right.
All right.
All right.
All right.
All right. All right. All right. Stop it.